There are two kinds of libraries with differing beliefs on access to knowledge and freedom of information. There are public libraries, which are open to all members of the community, and private libraries, where only those elite few who meet the requirements can access its contents. Often, the beliefs of the libraries are based on the religious beliefs of the country and the time in which the libraries were founded. To explore this trend, I am joined by Daniel Berry, a Swedish National Library expert, Lara Bazrafshan, a Vatican Library expert, and Tiziana Bruno, a reference library, a librarian. Welcome. Thank you all for being here today. I would like to start by learning a bit more about your individual academic and professional backgrounds.
Hi, my name is Danielle Berry, and I am currently a professor at Stockholm University, where I teach a course about the early modern period from a Nordic perspective. I've studied the history of the Stockholm Library and the role of the Protestant Reformation in its development.
Hi, this is Lara Bazrafshan. I'm a historian specializing in the Vatican Apostolic Library, and I'm from the University of Calgary. I lecture on the development of private libraries during the early modern period in Europe.
Hi, my name is Tiziana Bruno, and I'm a reference librarian at the University of Toronto's Kelly Library. I have a PhD in Library and Information Science. As part of my research, I have focused on comparing public libraries with private libraries. One aspect I focused on in my research has been the censorship of information in certain religions, particularly Catholicism, and how access to information in libraries was very limited during the early modern period in Europe.
It would be helpful to our listeners to gain a bit of context on the time period we will be discussing today. Can each of you explain how the societies that your libraries were centered around were structured during the 1600s and 1700s?
Well, Sweden was a lot different in the beginning of the early modern period than we know it as today. During the 1600s, Swedes were heavily involved in many wars, and being a good soldier was a key aspect of society. King Gustavus Adolphus and his army were one of the major components of the Thirty Years' War. The citizens were fighting so often that reading wasn't important. Knowing how to work together as an army took precedence over literacy, and only priests, royalty, and higher members of the army were literate.
On that note, the minimal attention to literacy and reading during the early modern period is reinforced by the Catholic Church, in which the Vatican is at the heart, because indeed only priests and other churchmen were taught and allowed to read. Private libraries were commonly understood to be personal collections with books and documents, and the ones that existed in Europe during the 1400s, 1500s, 1600s belonged primarily to lawyers and to churchmen. Private libraries, as such, were rare before the 1700s, even among the rich and elite classes. Incidentally, the largest private library in Europe during the early modern period belonged to a church in Denmark, and it was seized by King Charles X of Sweden. But this is the time, after the 1700s, that private libraries started to become commonplace, but among the elite social classes only.
I am sensing accessibility to information as a major theme here. Were materials censored and certain members of the public prevented from being able to access information?
Yes.
Did accessibility affect the development of libraries in these countries then?
Yes, it did. To be specific, by gathering knowledge and containing it to a certain few within the church, the authority and the power of the church was reinforced and censorship persisted. In addition to the priests, it was only the members of the elite class that had the ability to read. So private libraries arose as a result of those few members who had the means to collect their own set of books. The library I specialize in is the Vatican Apostolic Library, a private library in Vatican City. It has actually been a library since the mid-1400s under Pope Nicholas V, who is credited with establishing this secret collection. It contains books, religious texts, coins, prints, and other papal artifacts. However, this private library was kept a secret for many decades, so much so that a librarian was not appointed until the next century. The Vatican was not open to sharing information with the public for many reasons, including protection of the Church's authority and ideology, and a desire to protect and preserve what was being kept within the Vatican Library. The secrecy of its collections was upheld so severely to the point that a priest in the 1700s criticized the private library for being a tomb for books instead of an actual library. But by the 1800s, the early and modern period ended, so numerous books and artifacts were made less private and were available for reference work, albeit with many rules and limitations on admission criteria. Those eligible to enter the private library's reading rooms included only archivists, scholars, researchers, theologians, and historians, and even then, many sets of identification papers were required.
Interesting. What about in Sweden?
In 1697, the royal library housed in the royal castle was lost in a fire. Not just the library was lost, an entire portion of the castle was lost, obviously affecting Sweden in multiple ways. Around the same time, Lutheranism replaced Catholicism as the main religion of Sweden. With Lutheranism came a national mandate that required everyone to be literate before they could have a job or be married, or be confirmed, including the peasants. Basically, if you couldn't read, you couldn't become an independent adult. This was implemented so everyone could read the Bible for themselves. Each parent was responsible for educating their child themselves and was provided the materials by which they could teach their child to read in the form of a psalm book. Churches also offered literacy classes, likely for children of the peasants, to be able to learn to read if their parents weren't able to teach them. So even without the presence of a physical library, the Swedes found a way to give their citizens an adequate accessibility to information through the psalm book. Since the population was now completely literate, the Royal Library was then reopened as a separate building, while the smaller royal collection was still isolated in the rebuilt castle. In 1877, the Royal Library was officially declared the National Library, and within a year, the newly built building was opened to the public.
I'm interested in why exactly access to information was so vastly different between these two countries. We brought in an information professional to help us decode the cause of the censorship and provide context on why the development of libraries was so different in these two countries. Welcome, Tiziana Bruno.
Thank you for inviting me and having me here as a guest today.
Can you please elaborate on why exactly the situations in these countries were so different?
Well, let me begin by explaining what is meant by censorship, specifically religious censorship. It can be defined as the act of suppressing views that are contrary to those of an organized religion, where freedom of expression is controlled or limited. The origin of the term censor can be traced back to the office of censor, which was established in Rome in 443 BC. In Rome, as well as in the ancient Greek communities, the ideal of good governance included shaping the character of the people. Therefore, censorship was regarded as an honorable task. In ancient societies like China, censorship was considered a legitimate instrument for regulating the moral and political life of the population.
Censorship was affected by the invention of the printing press around 1440, which altered the nature of book publishing. By the 16th century, both the church and governments in most European countries attempted to regulate and control printing because it allowed for rapid and widespread circulations of ideas and information. Governments established control over the printers across Europe, which required them to have official licenses to trade and produce books. What was the Catholic Church's view on this?
The Catholic Church decided to ban hundreds of books on the grounds that they were either obscene or violated religious beliefs. The Church kept a list of prohibited books called the Index Librorum Prohibitorum. It was first published by Pope Paul IV around 1559 and was revised multiple times over the years. Most of the items on this list were writings that the Church's Holy Office had deemed dangerous. The list's purpose was to protect the faith and morals of the faithful by preventing them from reading these immoral books. It was not until 1965 that the index was abolished.
The 17th and 18th centuries represented a time of reason in Europe. The rights, liberty, and dignity of the individual became political issues, subsequently protected by law in many countries.
That is correct. This era is commonly referred to as the Age of Enlightenment or the Age of Reason. The demands for religious freedom and tolerance grew stronger during the 18th century, and a process of secularization began. The church did not want to remain passive, so it sought to maintain or regain its influence. Surveillance and control of subversive religious texts was one of the most important means for the church to maintain its influence on society. Therefore, censorship consequently became more important for this process of change. Sweden's religious literature was monitored through a system of double censorship, involving both the religious and secular authorities. In 1766, freedom of the press was introduced, and Sweden became the first country to abolish censorship and also introduce a law guaranteeing freedom of the press. Denmark-Norway followed suit in 1770.
How was Lutheranism different than Catholicism in that respect?
The religion of Lutheranism involved much greater access to information for its people. The Swedes were interested in providing accessibility to information for all members of its population, as opposed to Italy's Catholicism, where instead members were mainly illiterate and attended church to listen to the priest deliver a sermon.
Well, there you go. Maybe Danielle Berry can jump in here. Perhaps the success of Sweden in implementing a public library system was largely due to the unfortunate fire. Is this correct?
Exactly. Sweden was fortunate, or unfortunate, depending on your opinion, to experience a fire right before making literacy a mandatory component to life. So by the time another library was finished being built, having private access would go against their religion as well as their rights and freedoms, especially the rights of the peasants to have access to the same information as the upper class.
But why didn't this shift occur in Italy until much later?
Well, frankly, citizens didn't know any better. Being in Italy before the 1700s, most people were not accustomed to publicly seeking knowledge. Individual rights to access of information was not a concept that people thought about because they were simply unaware. People did not know of the existence, let alone the value, of reading and the extensive access to information that it grants the reader. being able to read and access knowledge was not an option for everyone.
How has the Vatican Library evolved today?
The Vatican Apostolic Library certainly remains a private library, but it is moving towards being less restrictive and offering more open access. More material than ever has been placed on public shelves, and there are less restrictions about admission eligibility and about using the library. And perhaps the most impressive move towards sharing information is since the 2000s, many texts have been converted to digital formats and are easily accessible online. However, questions and tensions do persist about the continuing development of the Vatican as a private library, in particular between traditions and technology, and changing values on access to information.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much to Danielle Berry, Lara Bazrafshan, and Tiziana Bruno. Join me next week for an inside look at the New York Public Library.